U.S. House of Representatives is expected to consider an impeachment measure against President Donald Trump tomorrow morning. The House is poised to do that if Vice President Mike Pence doesn't invoke the 25th Amendment to remove Trump, which looks unlikely at this point. This all comes after last week's violent insurrection at the U.S. Capitol by pro-Trump extremists, an event that Democrats say the president incited. You can join in at 800-642-1234. How do you want to see lawmakers responding to that insurrection? Do you think it's necessary, a good idea to impeach the president to set a precedent? Do you think it'd be wiser to ride out the rest of his term, which ends next week? You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Lara Brown is an associate professor and director of the Graduate School of Political Management at George Washington University. She's the author of a number of books, including her most recent Amateur Hour, Presidential Character and the Question of Leadership. Lara, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks for having me on this afternoon.
Well, I mentioned that some Democrats had accused the president of provoking this insurrection, some Republicans too, and we're seeing news. The first, I believe, Republican member of the House, Representative Katko from New York, a Republican, saying that he would support impeachment. He would vote to impeach. Can you talk about the move toward impeachment and what the momentum looks like right now?
Well, so I think what we're looking at and what we have to understand is at first we had a president who incited and certainly encouraged his supporters to contest the counting of state-certified electoral ballots. That really is an attack from the executive branch on the legislature. It is very important for the legislature to push back on this encroaching executive and certainly to remand this president publicly and for all of history. It is the case that an impeachment article has been written up, and it appears, go for a vote tomorrow. That unanimous consent agreement related, or I should say the resolution that would require unanimous consent about the 25th Amendment is likely to fail, as you mentioned in your report. And then what we have after the House impeaches a president, if it passes with a majority vote, which by all appearances it will do, then it will go to the Senate and there will be a Senate trial. There will be House managers appointed who will essentially act as the prosecutors. The Chief Justice of the Supreme Court would preside over this Senate trial, and there would be a defense mounted from the president. But I do think that what is important is that the Republicans have said that impeachment will be a conscience vote. And what that means is that there is going to be no partisan whipping on this. So we are not sure how bipartisan this effort may be in the House, or whether or not even by the time it gets to the Senate, there may be calls for a conviction.
And what would the timeline be like on something like that? There aren't many days left if the goal of impeachment is to remove the president from office.
Well, that's right, except that, Senate Minority Leader, soon to be Majority Leader, Chuck Schumer, has floated today that there is a rule that was put in place in 2004 that would allow the Senate to come back into session if both he and Mitch McConnell actually agree, that they would not need a unanimous consent agreement from all of the senators. So we are sort of uncertain as to the timing. Senator McConnell has said it would not happen until the Senate comes back into session. And the first time that they could essentially receive the article from the House would be January 19th, which means the trial would not take place until after the inaugural. But Chuck Schumer is pushing back and saying, I think there is a rule that McConnell and I could jointly agree to together to get this trial underway. So there is a lot in flux, and I would argue that much will depend on the Republican response to what the president is saying in Texas, how defiant he appears, and kind of the continuing politics of the situation.
I wanted to get your thoughts on Vice President Mike Pence and all of this. He would be a key in the 25th Amendment effort to remove the president. But he was also there in Congress presiding over the counting of the electoral ballots. The mob that had just gotten done listening to the president, some of them at one of the entrances were chanting, "Hang Mike Pence." One of the lawyers who's filed lawsuits in favor of the president said Mike Pence should be first to be shot, basically. Talk about the position this puts Vice President Pence in.
Well, I mean, we are in a position where Vice President Mike Pence, first of all, it's important to realize that he was elected separately. So even though he and President Trump ran on a ticket together in 2016, the Electoral College, when the electors cast their ballots, they cast separate votes. That was put into force by the 12th Amendment to the Constitution. And so President Trump is not in any kind of position to fire Mike Pence. But at the same time, I think Vice President Mike Pence has made very clear that however angry he may be with the president, he is interested in the president serving out his term. And I think Pence is looking for his political future to be aligned with President Trump.
Talking to Laura Brown from George Washington University, political scientist there, looking at the latest on moves toward impeachment. You can join in with your thoughts at 800-642-1234. Cheryl is with us in Conover. Cheryl, hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. You know, I sort of take issue with people saying that it's the Democrats that are accusing the president of this insurrection. It's not just Democrats. It should be the entire society of America. It's wrong to portray it as just being Democrats. And I've heard some various and sundry people saying it's the Democrats that call it an insurrection. There are independents, there are Republicans, and there are regular people who don't identify with a party that feel that this is definitely against our democracy.
Cheryl, thanks for the call. And in my intro, I did say Democrats saying that the president were saying that the president's words amounted to inciting insurrection. You are correct. And I tried to briefly do that. We played a clip from former Governor Chris Christie, Republican, longtime supporter of the president, who said, yes, this was incitement from the president. Laura, how much do you see concern about the president and his involvement with this transcending partisan difference?
Well, I do think it is transcending partisan difference. And I agree with your caller. At the end of the day, we saw a mob of angry Americans deciding that the legislative branch and the constitutional process by which we formalize the results of our election was somehow invalid, and that there was a desire to prevent that process from going forward. And I do think that your caller is right. Every American should look at not only what happened on January 6th with those who stormed and assaulted the Capitol, but we should not forget that the president was also caught in a telephone call where he was trying to engage in undue influence with the Georgia Secretary of State looking to overturn that election. We are in a place where all Americans who care about our constitutional process, our democratic institutions, and really the legitimacy of our elections should be banding together and saying, this is about ensuring that our country moves forward and that a cult of personality or a party allegiance are really irrelevant to the process of politics that all Americans admire and support.
Let's go to Evan in Lone Rock now. Evan, hi.
Yeah, I wondered if the guest would agree with me, as I'm a member of alternative media and I'm not a conservative, But many of my colleagues in alternative media who are conservative feel that they have been grossly discriminated against for their political viewpoint, and so many of their lives have been completely ruined as they've been censored and deplatformed. And when we saw the crowds in Washington destroying media equipment, I think is that maybe a sign that people in the conservative alternative media who've been persecuted, deplatformed, censored by big tech, which now feels it can even censor the president of the United States, who I despise, by the way, but I despise big tech more. And I'm furious myself, even though I'm still on YouTube, barely, but all my conservative colleagues have been banned, and they are just, they've lost their livelihoods, and they are furious. And I think this is a big reason for the kind of anger that we saw in Washington.
Evan, thanks for that call. Laura, go ahead.
Well, I think this is a really interesting conversation and a complex one. Let me just say that, first of all, there is no free speech right to essentially engage in either hate speech or speech that promotes violence. We even know that dangerous speech, right, saying fire inside of a movie theater that is packed is not permitted. And it is also true that these platforms are private companies, so they can regulate their terms of service. This is not a, if you will, squelching of personal opinion. That being said, I also think it's very important for there to be a pluralist exchange. But pluralism and a competition for ideas has to operate with some level of truth and trust. And we are in a place right now where I get emails from conservatives saying that every single thing the Washington Post has written is clearly wrong and I should just believe the opposite. So that is false. I mean, one of the things that has been promoted in conservative and alternative media is that the mainstream media's news organizations are factually incorrect. And that is not true. And I do think that we have to realize that misinformation, disinformation, grifting, and sort of promoting conspiracies for the purposes of one's own self-interest or personal enrichment is not something that should be promoted by any platform. We did and used to have much higher standards for our media when there were many fewer alternatives for people to turn to for information. So it is no surprise that some of these companies are now starting to realize that they have kind of created a monster by allowing everybody and anyone to become an influencer. And this is not about squelching democratic conversation. It is about preventing the lies and the misinformation and the intentional disinformation that has been put out there. Quickly, let me just say that in some ways, I would argue that were President Trump still on Twitter, it is likely that an impeachment and removal effort would move more quickly than it might. In other words, I think that President Trump is his own worst enemy. And I think that in some ways, Twitter may have helped the president prevent him from being removed from office, because I do not believe he would have had the restraint to stay quiet.
We're looking at the effort to impeach President Trump. Laura Brown is with us, director of the Graduate School of Political Management at George Washington University. You can join in with your thoughts, reactions, and questions at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our talk with Laura Brown, associate professor and director of the Graduate School of Political Management at George Washington University, looking at the latest on the effort to impeach President Trump. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you want to see happen in Congress? 800-642-1234 is the number. Back to your calls now. Dr. Amara is with us in Milwaukee. Hi.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yep. Go for it.
Yeah, I'm a first-generation Pakistani-American, been here for three decades, and I just want to tell my fellow Americans who are not from my part of the world, we saw this exact thing happen in 1971 when Bhutto lost the election in half of the country, and he said that he will not accept the results of the election. He will not concede the result to the other guy who clearly won the majority. That led to division of the country. Pakistan was divided into East Pakistan and West Pakistan. And West Pakistan, that was led by Bhutto, went through a decline and fall that continues to this date. And the East Pakistan continued to prosper. This person, if he is not impeached, not surgically excised from our society, not ostracized, will do the same to my American country as well. He will divide the country. He will rule over the part of the country that will go through decline, and this person will not care because Bhutto never cared for the country that he led. He destroyed that country where he was lived, and eventually...
Thanks a lot for the call. I want to bring Laura back in on this lesson there. Our caller says from Pakistan, in this case, are people trying to draw lessons and maybe raise warnings that we've seen elsewhere in the world, Laura?
Well, yes. Other scholars who are comparativists who study other countries, who look at different democratic systems, certainly they have sort of raised warnings for all of us who have studied American politics. I do want to, though, just reassure your listeners that America, interestingly enough, has in many times fought back and sort of gone against any of these kinds of movements, even when initially they seem to be very popular. So, of course, we had the Civil War, which was devastating and painful. But we can look at other times when we have seen essentially a faction of a party or a personal individual depart from kind of the mainstream. And eventually, even if they start with some level of popularity, they become ostracized and seen as following what might be thought of as an un-American idea. So we can take a look at Senator Strom Thurmond, who was upset about the Democrats, integrating the army in 1948. And he formed the Dixiecrat Party that was in favor of segregation. He was eventually ostracized. We can think about Joseph McCarthy, who tried to create some sort of commission to identify those who were un-American or engaged in communist activities. He had his moment in the sun, but he also fell by the wayside. And while we have not seen a president really act in this sort of un-American manner, I do think that we will see that once President Trump is out of office, he will lose the allure that he carries now for many Americans who realize that he has been not telling the truth to them.
Thanks for that call. We'll go now to Sarah with us in Zion. Sarah, hi.
Hi. Deep breath. Okay, not only do I support Trump being impeached again, but I think that there needs to be action regarding Ted Cruz and Josh Hawley for continuing to support the idea that the election was stolen even after the insurrection attempt. And then there's that representative from Colorado, Lauren Boebert, who tweeted that Nancy Pelosi had been removed from the chambers while it was happening. And she should be, the FBI should be looking into that.
Thanks for the call. Laura, there has been some talk of censure or attempts to remove particular members of Congress for their roles in this. Is this what would it take to do something like that?
Well, so the 14th Amendment does have a provision in there that essentially allows the Congress to say that we are essentially charging these individuals with some level of sedition and looking for them to be expelled from Congress. There were 14 individuals in the past who were charged with supporting the Confederacy during the Civil War. And in those cases, the Senate considered expulsion. But You know, they did send them out of Congress, but I think it is important to realize that you are, when you are doing that, you are overturning those constituents' votes. So expulsion is something that is usually reserved for only the most severe circumstances. I would not be surprised if we saw censure resolutions for those members who were the most egregious in kind of denying the Electoral College vote counting, or who were engaged in kind of the organization and rallying of those troops. And I say troops because I do think the mob was something of a militia or citizen army. And I think it's also important, though, to realize that these members of Congress, senators and representatives, will have to face their constituents. And many of their local newspapers have already called for their resignations. So I don't envision that we're going to see expulsion movements, but we may well see resignation movements and censure resolutions.
Thanks for that call. And Laura, we'll leave it there for now. Thanks for joining us again.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Laura Brown is an associate professor and director of the Graduate School of Political Management at the George Washington University. She talked to us today about the latest on the effort to impeach President Trump and what happens next.